Okay, so this kid's having an acute asthma attack, as evidenced by his wheezing on the soccer field. You might wonder what the whole like oral acyclovir being used for an eruption over his left antecubital fossa is about. That's referring to eczema herpeticum. Okay, that's a very challenging diagnosis, a very 2CK family medicine level diagnosis. But patients who have eczema, they can literally get a herpes, HSV 1 and 2, superinfection due to inoculation of that cracked skin of the eczema. Okay, so it causes a very, very painful vesicular eruption superimposed on eczema. Okay, called eczema herpeticum. So it can be, or it can be self-inoculated, let's say from a cold sore or inoculated from a mother's cold sore onto that eczema. Students tend to confuse eczema herpeticum with dermatitis herpetiformis, which is the autoimmune eruption, autoimmune cutaneous eruption you get in celiac disease, but that has nothing to do with herpes. But eczema herpeticum, which this patient has, is in fact a herpes superinfection on eczema. Now, why is that important in this vignette? It's not so crucial, but it's corroborating of the wheezing presentation being in fact asthma, where we say, okay, this kid has atopy, which is eczema, seasonal allergies, rhinoconjunctivitis, asthma, right? So we look and we say, what are the arterial blood findings in acute asthma attack? Now, highest yield point is knowing that CO2 is decreased, not increased. Immediately, students say, what the fuck? Like, I don't get it. If you can't breathe, why is CO2 low? Like, shouldn't it be high? It's because his respiratory rate is high. And this comes down to knowing that O2 diffuses slowly, CO2 diffuses quickly. So what this means is, in order for O2 to diffuse properly, in order to get O2 in, we need to have healthy lung. But because CO2 diffuses quickly, we don't necessarily need healthy lung. As long as our respiratory rate is high, we'll blow off that CO2. So in this case, an acute asthma attack, we've got secretions in the lungs, we've got bronchoconstriction, right? Lungs are fucked up. So O2, which diffuses slowly, this is an insufficient presentation in order to have adequate oxygenation. So O2 will be low, but CO2 can diffuse quickly, and so CO2 will be decreased. Okay, so this is an important concept, knowing that CO2 is low in hyperventilation in most circumstances. Okay, I'd say 19 out of 20 questions. There's a lot of like rabbit holes I can go down in terms of discussion, but you need to know that overwhelming majority of scenarios, if your respiratory rate is high, your CO2 is low. Doesn't matter how fucked up your lungs are. So pulmonary embolism, acute asthma attack, CO2, low, not high. Okay. Now, pH would be elevated because we have an acute respiratory alkalosis. That makes sense. Our CO2 is low. And then you also need to know that our bicarbonate is normal because it takes a while for bicarbonate to change, about 12 to 24 hours before bicarbonate can start to compensate. So sometimes you ask students about the bicarbonate here, they're like, oh, like bicarbonate would be low, that would compensate, right, for the alkalinity from the acute respiratory alkalosis, but that's not true. Once again, bicarb, it's only going to change in a chronic respiratory acid-base disturbance. So let's say you go to high altitude, right? You get a chronic respiratory alkalosis, your bicarb can start to decrease. Or let's say in chronic respiratory acidosis, like obesity, hypoventilation syndrome, or COPD, where there are chronic CO2 retainers, we could expect bicarb to go up to compensate. So once again, I could chat about this for 90 minutes to a nice, like, lengthy discussion, but for the sake of this question, you need to know that an acute asthma attack, as well as pulmonary embolism, where you're hyperventilating, your CO2 is low, okay? Your pH is up, that's your acute respiratory alkalosis, and your bicarb is normal because it doesn't have time to change. That's it.